Today on Wings, we revisit the political struggle around emergency contraception in the United States.
The condom broke.
I missed a pill.
I'll never believe what happened.
The diaphragm slipped.
Right now, the pills are available without a prescription if your pharmacy complies.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
According to Time magazine, women in the U.S. began stocking up on emergency contraception pills as soon as Justice Kennedy announced he would step down from the U.S. Supreme Court, allowing Donald Trump to appoint his replacement. It is widely believed that a right-shifted Supreme Court will reverse the decision that legalized abortion. The morning after, or emergency contraception pill, is used to prevent ovulation and does not disrupt a pregnancy in progress, but some allege it can keep a fertilized embryo from attaching to the uterus wall. Official attacks on the morning after pill have taken place before, as you will hear. Emily Falk covered this pill and its politics back in 2006 when George W. Bush was president. Will update as needed to 2018.
I had unprotected sex, and I remember that it was a Friday night, and I knew about Planned Parenthood, but the Planned Parenthoods weren't open on the weekend, and I was really concerned about not having access to anything at the time.
I had actually just started taking oral contraceptives at that time. You know, you're supposed to take oral contraceptives for X amount of time before it's considered to be an effective contraceptive. I was right in the middle of that time frame.
My boyfriend immediately said, you know, we should try and get you the Plan B.
I was very upset about the situation at the time. A condom had broken, and I was just very upset that I had tried to be responsible and it hadn't worked out as I had planned.
What would you do if you found yourself in this position? The condom broke or slipped, you forgot to take your pills, you were forced. For any number of reasons, it might be necessary to consider your options. One option is emergency contraception. In more than 41 countries around the world, emergency contraception is sold over the counter. In Canada and Cameroon, China and Congo, Denmark and France, you can get emergency contraception without a doctor. But here in the United States, where I'm from, this is a highly contentious issue. Emergency contraception is currently sold under the brand name Plan B in the United States, and throughout this piece, you'll hear people refer to Plan B, emergency contraception, EC, postcoital contraception, and the morning after pill, all referring to the same thing. One thing that Plan B is not, however, is an abortificant. That is, Plan B will not interfere with a pregnancy that's already been established. Dr. Susan Baldwin, a practicing physician, researcher, and women's health advocate, told me that this is a point that often causes confusion.
A lot of people, including physicians, don't understand the difference between emergency contraception or the morning after pill and RU486 or the abortion pill. Emergency contraception prevents conception, whereas RU486 or the abortion pill or mifepristone actually will terminate a pregnancy, and EC will not.
So if it doesn't end a pregnancy, how does Plan B prevent it?
There's still some doubt about the mechanism, but it appears, based on studies done in animals, and actually a study that was done in women in Chile, that the mechanism of emergency contraception is primarily by interfering with or delaying or preventing ovulation. The hormone progesterone, and when taken in the relatively large doses that are found in Plan B, interferes with what's called the LH surge, which is a spike in hormones that happens around mid-cycle in a woman's menstrual cycle that triggers ovulation. There is potentially a time-dependent effect of the drug, in which if you took it after ovulation, it wouldn't work as well. And that's why we have to allow that there may be another mechanism, such as disruption of implantation. But the evidence doesn't show that taking Plan B affects implantation of a fertilized egg.
Some opponents of Plan B argue that if there is any possibility that the contraception might interfere with implantation of a fertilized egg in the uterine wall, then the pill should not be used. They liken this possibility to the possibility of aborting a fetus. Those who support wider availability of Plan B argue that many fertilized eggs never implant, and other well-established forms of birth control, including regular birth control pills, likely have similar mechanisms of action to Plan B. Supporters also point to research suggesting that wider availability of the drug could cut the number of abortions each year in half by preventing unwanted pregnancies before they even happen. Another argument commonly made against Plan B is that allowing easy access to emergency contraception could encourage promiscuity, or that if emergency contraception were made widely available, women would abandon other forms of birth control. Dr. Michelle Seelig is a practicing physician and women's health researcher. I asked her about the evidence here.
Is there any evidence that you know of that suggests that providing emergency contraception would actually increase unprotected sex or sexual activity in general?
The studies around Plan B have shown that that is not the case, that having Plan B available does not increase risky sexual behavior.
A last point of contention surrounds potential side effects of taking the higher doses of hormones found in Plan B. Both Dr. Baldwin and Dr. Seelig told me that Plan B is very safe. This is not to say that the drug is free of side effects. For example, Carol took emergency contraception when she was in college.
I remember I was studying for a Spanish exam. I was very, very nauseous and very afraid I was going to throw up. So I remember I sat in one bathroom stall in case I had to throw up. It was a communal bathroom, and my boyfriend sat in the other one and quizzed me on Spanish words.
Despite the side effects experienced by some, the safety of the drug has been compared to that of aspirin. In fact, the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology, as well as the American Medical Association, suggest that sexually active women consider keeping the pills on hand.
For many years, reproductive health professionals have been recommending advanced provision of EC.
Again, Dr. Baldwin.
Which is that you don't wait until the condom breaks, or you go on a trip and forget your pills, or in the case of sexual assault and rape. But in all those situations, it would be better for more women to have the drug on hand. It should be in the medicine cabinet next to the Tylenol. It's very safe, and it decreases the chance of unintended pregnancy happening after unprotected sex dramatically. It's 89% effective.
It's only been 5 years since the Food and Drug Administration under President Obama decided to make morning after contraception an over-the-counter medication with no restrictions on who can buy it, regardless of age or sex. That happened in August of 2013, after years of political wrangling. According to Teen Vogue, already 1 in 9 American women between ages 15 and 44 have used it. Even though many drugstores hide it behind the counter, at least partly because it's expensive, about $50 a pill. But here's how much harder it was to get this pill just 12 years ago, in 2006.
Even with physicians like Dr. Seelig and Dr. Baldwin, who talk to their patients in advance and provide emergency contraception before an emergency happens, it's still a major effort for most women to get in and see a physician at all. Since emergency contraception is most effective the sooner it's taken, 9 states have passed legislation allowing specially trained pharmacists to write a prescription if a woman comes in need of emergency contraception. These states are Alaska, Hawaii, Maine, Massachusetts, New Hampshire, New Mexico, Vermont, Washington, and my own state, California. Given that California is one state that supposedly has easier access, I decided to see what it would be like to try to find a place to sell me the pills without help from a doctor. After finding a website with a list of pharmacies that supposedly have people on hand who can prescribe Plan B, I started calling around. Since I began my calling on a Sunday morning, several pharmacies were closed. Of those that were open, not a single pharmacist who had prescribing privileges was on duty.
Most pharmacies have strict policies against letting employees be recorded on tape, but one pharmacist gave me some basic information on the condition of anonymity.
So, if I wanted to obtain emergency contraception right now, what would I have to do?
I would have to have a certified pharmacist on staff, unless you had a prescription. So if you have a prescription, then we can fill it for you without having a certified pharmacist.
And do you have a certified pharmacist, like if I came in right now?
Not right now, no. Because not every pharmacist is certified. I'd have to check the schedule to see one, because we only have, I think, one staff pharmacist that's certified. So she's here 5 days a week.
Okay, like during business hours or other hours or when?
It just, their shifts rotate. So it could be either from like 8 to 4, 11 to 7, or like 2 to 10. And occasionally we'll have other pharmacists that are certified that are just floating.
And just for my information, when would be the next time from now that a certified pharmacist would be available?
Oh, hold on just a moment, Lucy.
Thanks a lot. Hey, Jude, don't make it bad.
Take a sad song and... You know, I don't know because she's not on the schedule for this week, so I don't know if she's going to be on vacation or what. Or if it's just an error. Tomorrow would be the soonest. You could like call after 8 tomorrow and find out.
In the end, I called every pharmacy within 10 miles of my home, listed on a site claiming to provide the names of pharmacies that will dispense emergency contraception without a prescription. After basically failing in my pharmacy search, I called the emergency room at the University of California, Los Angeles. They declined to be taped, however they told me that if I wanted to come in and see a provider to be dispensed the drug, I would need to be admitted to the emergency room. Unless I had really good health insurance, it was likely to cost me, quote, hundreds of dollars. So let's do the math for a moment. Had I had unprotected sex on Friday or Saturday and waited until Sunday to buy the pills, I probably would have been out of luck for the 72-hour window. Also, keep in mind that the longer you wait, the less effective the contraception is, even within that period. So, even if I had had the unprotected sex late Saturday night, I would have had to risk going a whole nother day until Monday morning, when presumably I could make it in to see a doctor, or when more clinics would be open, and when more pharmacists with prescribing privileges would be back on duty. But I have a job, and it might not be possible for me to make it to a pharmacy on a Monday morning. I supposedly have it easy in California. Alina is from a state where there is no pharmacy access legislation, and has used emergency contraception twice. The first time, she was living near a large metropolitan area, and used an online service that allowed her to have a prescription sent to a pharmacy in the city.
I was able to order it online and pick it up at a pharmacy there that same day. Once you fill out the questionnaire and order the prescription, they have a person call you and confirm that you're actually a person and talk to you. And then they send a prescription to the pharmacy.
The second time was less straightforward.
I've since moved to a different area, which is about a 3-hour drive from the city. It's a pretty rural area. It's a lot more conservative than the city is. And a few weeks ago, I also needed the pill again. And I tried to do this thing through the website again. Unfortunately, the website, when they called me, they said that no pharmacy within my like hour and a half driving area carried the Plan B pill. And, you know, the woman suggested that I either drive out into the city farther out and get it there, or that I find a Planned Parenthood and see if they would do it. And so I actually did some research and found a Planned Parenthood not too far away. It was about 45 minutes away from where I live. And I went there, and it was a great experience because they just let me walk in, and the doctor asked me some questions, and she gave me Plan B. It was really quick again. I was really grateful for Planned Parenthood. I mean, I knew about it before, but I didn't realize like how necessary it actually was.
Alina's experience is somewhat typical, except that she's probably better off than most in that she knew what she was looking for. Dr. Susan Baldwin, who you heard earlier in the show, has spent the past 2 years studying who knows about and who has access to emergency contraception.
We looked at the women 15 to 44 in California, so there were 11,400 women in the study, and they basically represent 7 million women and teens in California. Women in rural parts of the state are far less likely to have heard of EC and far less likely to have used it, even once they have heard of it. So access does seem to be a problem in many pockets of the state.
Dr. Baldwin also found that women who were older, more educated, wealthier, Caucasian, had insurance or a private doctor, were more likely to know about emergency contraception. However, among those who had heard of it, there were no racial disparities in use, which implies that the method is accepted across diverse populations. Furthermore, women who are younger and women living on lower incomes were more likely to use emergency contraception once they had heard of it than women in other demographic categories, which underscores the importance of easy access for everyone. Many of the women I talked with who were able to access emergency contraception easily did so through university health services. Caroline was in college when she needed EC. She had been with one partner, her college boyfriend, and a condom broke.
And so the next morning I went to our college campus health center because it was a widely known fact that they had Plan B. They weren't scary about it. You could just go in and be like, I need it. And they'd be like, okay. And then maybe 3 weeks later, the same thing happened, a sign of our not knowing how to use condoms properly or something. So then I went back in, and they were just as friendly and non-judgmental, but I was like, so I just need this, and I'm about to start using birth control. And the woman was sort of like, why don't you just take an extra one, just in case? And I kind of thought that was funny, but I guess it made sense. They weren't open on weekends, so if this hadn't been weekday sex, it would have been a problem to get it. I still carry around the extra one everywhere I go. It's like one of the things that is lying around on my dresser or in a drawer, and I always go, well, there you are. And so within the first year of that, whenever I had friends tell me about their close calls, I always told them, well, actually, I have an extra pack. If that ever happens again, you can call me because I don't think I'm going to need it.
On Wings, we revisit the political struggle around emergency contraception in the United States. Emily Falk covered this pill and its politics back in 2006 when George W. Bush was president.
While many women have successfully obtained and used emergency contraception in the United States, what about younger teens and women who don't attend universities or women who live in rural areas far away from reproductive health clinics? It was partially these types of questions that caused a group of more than 70 medical and public health organizations to file a citizens' petition to have the Food and Drug Administration move Plan B from prescription to over-the-counter status in 2001. Nothing came of this request, and in 2003, Plan B's manufacturer, Bar Pharmaceuticals, also filed a formal application to the Food and Drug Administration for over-the-counter status. That was 3 years ago. Early on, two expert advisory panels at FDA voted nearly unanimously to grant Plan B's over-the-counter status. However, despite the conclusions of scientists at FDA, each time a decision has seemed near, that decision has been put off. At 2 points, the agency raised concerns about younger teens using the drug without supervision. In response, Barr resubmitted the application with stricter and stricter age restrictions, moving from including women of all ages to only including women 16 and older, and then to only women 17 and older. This situation is so unprecedented. Dr. Susan Wood, the Assistant Commissioner for Women's Health and the Director of the Office of Women's Health, resigned from her job at the Food and Drug Administration.
What became clear to me was that, unfortunately, FDA was not able to reach a decision around emergency contraception coming over the counter that was based on either the science and evidence presented to the agency or the evaluation by the scientific staff at the FDA. It also was clearly ignoring the normal process by which FDA makes decisions, which was very disturbing. Finally, it clearly wasn't in the best interest of women and families. Safe and effective contraception seems to be something that should be common ground, something we should all support. It's good for public health. It's good for individual women's health. And the decision to indefinitely delay bringing emergency contraception over the counter was contrary to all of its principles. there was no disagreement over the quality of the data or the evidence on safety or efficacy or the ability to understand a product, understand the label and use it correctly in an over-the-counter setting. None of those issues, which are normally the issues that have to be considered in such a product, were under debate.
At the very beginning of 2005, after Barr had complied with all of FDA's requests and had resubmitted with new age restrictions, and after FDA had failed to provide a response, the Center for Reproductive Rights in New York filed a lawsuit asking the court to order FDA to make Plan B available without a prescription to women of all ages. Nancy Northup, the president of the Center for Reproductive Rights, spoke with me about the case.
The FDA was ignoring its own scientists in failing to approve it to be available over the counter. And that's why we've had to sue to have the agency live up to its administrative charter, which is to provide for the health and safety of citizens. The FDA is holding Plan B to a higher and different standard than other over-the-counter drugs. There was even an internal agency memorandum that indicated that the FDA had not previously distinguished the safety and efficacy of Plan B and other forms of hormonal contraception among different ages of women, and that there was no compelling scientific reason for such a distinction in this case.
The Government Accountability Office, or GAO, which is an investigative arm of the U.S. Congress, also looked into the issue. Quote, "The Plan B decision was not typical of the other 67 proposed prescription to over-the-counter switch decisions made by FDA from 1994 through 2004. The Plan B over-the-counter switch application was the only one during this period that was not approved after the advisory committee's recommended approval." End of quote. One of the main issues at stake here is what place the government has to rule over science. The FDA's expert scientists voted that over-the-counter status should be approved, yet that decision was overridden by people higher up in the agency. Furthermore, depositions released by the Center for Reproductive Rights also suggest that the Bush administration sought to unduly influence the agency during the Plan B application review process. Again, Nancy Northup from the Center for Reproductive Rights.
What we are finding in more depth is that the FDA staff who would ordinarily be involved in deciding on an over-the-counter switch application were recommending that that be done without age restriction. And we're also finding that the decision not to approve the OT switch was made at the highest levels within the agency and before the scientists had completed their review of the application.
Then, in an unexpected announcement, FDA said that it would reconsider the over-the-counter application of Plan B with an even stricter age cutoff that would only allow over-the-counter status to sell to women 18 and older. The Center for Reproductive Rights issued the following statement, quote, "The timing of FDA's announcement is highly suspect given the mounting pressure of two significant hearings involving the agency," end quote. One of the pressures referenced is the Senate confirmation hearing of acting director at FDA, Andrew von Eschenbach. In 2005, then acting commissioner at FDA, Lester Crawford, was confirmed in his position, with the understanding that he would move on the Plan B issue. However, instead of meeting a September 1, 2005 deadline, FDA called for a 60-day public comment period with no decision deadline in sight. So, this time around, for von Eschenbach's confirmation, Democratic Senators Hillary Rodham Clinton and Patty Murray have said that they will block a final confirmation of a new head of the agency until a final ruling is made on Plan B. Let's consider what's at stake. There are about 3 million unintended pregnancies in the United States alone each year, about half of which occur despite the use of regular contraception, and about half of which end in abortion. Considering only teenage pregnancy, the percentage is much higher. More than 3/4 of teenage pregnancies are unintended. This is the highest rate in the developed world. Teen mothers who already experience many more unplanned pregnancies than their older counterparts would be hardest hit by age restrictions on emergency contraception. If FDA moves to grant limited over-the-counter status for women 18 and older, is that good enough? Well, it's probably good enough to placate the Senate, and probably good enough to get Andrew von Eschenbach confirmed as permanent commissioner at FDA, but it also leaves younger women who have less access to transportation and less freedom to access the medical system to deal with a situation like we have now. The next weeks and months will say a lot about the current state of science versus politics in the U.S.
Senators Clinton and Murray did vote for Bush's nominee to head the FDA in 2006, and the FDA did approve the morning after pill to be available without a prescription, but only for sale to women 18 and older.
I'll leave you with a thought from Dr. Susan Wood.
FDA, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, has been, I believe, seen as a very credible and high-quality scientific organization around the world. I mean, it is seen as the gold standard and the one that other nations look to look at the data closely to make their decisions about everything ranging from drugs to food safety based on the best available evidence. And my concern is that although this to some people seems like just one decision about one product, it tells us that a small group of people who have inordinate influence seem to be able to turn the FDA around and seem to be able to force decisions that otherwise would not have been made if FDA had been allowed to do its job properly. There's no magic bullet to solve this problem. I think that people in the United States need to insist on a return to science-based decision-making by our health agencies. I think people around the world need to, I think, just continue to raise the issue that if we're going to look to the FDA to do the right thing, we need to make sure that it is doing the right thing, is able and allowed to do the right thing.
If you would like more information about where to obtain emergency contraception, check out ec.princeton.edu, which is a website that's available in English, Spanish, French, or Arabic, to find out about your options. For the Women's International News Gathering Service, I'm Emily Falk in Los Angeles. Special thanks today to Mike Lesnick for the music, and to all of the women who shared stories and connected me with other women making this report possible.
That report was about the controversy over the morning after pill in 2006. Since 2013, the pill has been available without a prescription in the U.S. to anyone of any age or sex, if your pharmacy complies. Trump's current appointee to head the Food and Drug Administration, Dr. Scott Gottlieb, is highly conservative, but also a fan of approving generic drugs to increase competition and lower prices. As of May 2018, Wings counted at least 8 brands of levonorgestrel-based morning-after pills on the market in the USA. At least one of them was approved in 2018, under Gottlieb's tenure. But if you're worried, stock up. Prices for some generics now go as low as $10. To hear this and other Wings programs again, email wings@wings.org or visit our new website, wingsradio.org. Wings thanks all our supporters, including your local community radio station, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughn, editor of the book Women and the Gift Economy. The Wings sound logo is from Libana's album A Circle is Cast. I'm Wings series producer Frieda Worden. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.